we get a little bit of our theme song?
Yeah.
Just to get people warmed up, right?
Let's do it.
Connor, dance? No.
If you go to Wikipedia, it says music composed by Connor Lestoker. And that is, I don't know.
Well, well, well. Yes, this is 372 pages we'll never get back. I'm Mike Nelson.
I'm Connor Lestoker, and this is a podcast about books we are probably going to hate. And we promise this is recording this time.
Yes. Yeah. So we started this with Ernest Cline's book, as you said, Ready Player One.
Yeah, and I think that our conversation from last time we performed here about Battletoads ended about 5 minutes before I walked in the door.
Right. It was a highlight of the evening, because you went for it. Not a single Battletoad fan in here. No, it was good. And since then, we have done six books.
We did two Ernest Cline books, and now we are on our ninth book. Yeah, we're going to be reading. I started it on the plane, but we're reading The Lair of the White Worm by Bram Stoker. He wrote another book from Dracula, and evidently it is quite bad.
Yes, it's Dracula's B-side, and no one listens to it. So we thought, what better book for us to read?
Before we run down what else we've covered, I want to do a little crowd work. Would you mind taking notes?
Oh,
so
sure.
So I can speak.
Of course.
This will make sense midway through what we're going to do, but for now it'll be a fun little game. From this side of the room, what letter does your dad's name start with?
J.
J. How about from over here? Anyone Riff Trax fans here? Anyone? Okay. What's the worst movie that we've ever covered on Riff Trax?
Roller Gator.
It's the second time Roller Gator has come up. From this side of the room, what's an animal that you hate?
Birds.
not expecting to hear birds. Any specific bird? Like, I hate mockingbirds. All birds.
Those flamingos are really those are the ones I hate the most.
From anywhere, what's a place you wouldn't bring a dog?
Here,
to the Sisyphus Brewing Company. And what's a song over here that you really dislike? Anyone? Who's Blinded by the Light by Bruce Springsteen? Well, all right. Okay. Birds and Blinded by the Light getting served on stage. All right, that'll make sense eventually.
Great, Connor. Thanks for that. Dig that hole. No, I'm kidding. All right, so let's run down. Our general topic is what makes a bad book, because I don't think we're experts. We've read, seven or eight books now. But there is a common, I'm not talking about on the podcast. And some of them are graphic novels, I'm cheating.
I got a beer from the bar, and on the back of the coasters, there is a quote from Albert Camus. It says, "The struggle itself towards the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy." And I read that, and I was like, why don't we read good books? Why do we subject ourselves to these awful pieces of garbage instead of reading things that would enrich our, mind and spirit?
Who's going to listen to that podcast, So one of the first books we took on was, we did an elevator pitch of it today, so I'm going to do it in the same style. I'm a 16-year-old kid. I've read one book in my life, and that book is Conan the Barbarian. Now, my book is about a barbarian. His name is Grignr. And I should mention that I don't know what words mean, so I'm going to be reaching to the thesaurus a lot and trying to triangulate. And so I'm going to tell this story now. And I have a little bit of a reading for you,
sure.
Give you a little flavor.
From The Eye of Argon by Jim Tice. Yes. This is a real book. It was written by a 16-year-old boy in the 70s.
As Grignr lifted the girl from the altar, her arms wound dexterously about his neck, soft and smooth against his harsh exterior. "Art thou pleased that we have chanced to meet once again?" Grignr merely voiced and sighed grunt, returning the damsel's embrace while he smothered her trim, delicate lips between the coursing protrusions of his reeking maw. "Let us take leave of this wretched chamber," stated Grignr, as he placed the female upon her feet. She swooned a moment, causing Grignr to give her support, then regained her stance. Art thou able to find your way through the accursed passages of this castle? Murphic. He just made up a name there. Every one of the corridors of this damned place are identical. I was at one time a slave of the Prince Arafim. His clammy touch sent a sour swill through my belly, but my efforts reaped a harvest. I gained the pig's liking, whereby he allowed me to have freedom of the palace. It was through this means that I eventually managed escape of the palace. It was a simple matter to seduce the sentry at the western gate. His trust found with a dagger through his ribs, the wench stated whimsicorically. So that's a bad book.
Yeah. I have found myself stating too many things whimsicorically lately. Yes. I need to cut it back.
Yes.
But yeah, so that is a very bad book. And my theory, and we can trace this through the other books we've done, is that David touched on it at the end of the thing. He said these are like alien cutouts pretending to be people.
Yeah.
And to me, that is what makes the bad books as bad as they are. They are not representations of any recognizable human activity.
Yes.
For example, using words like whimsicorically, or describing a kiss by the coursing protrusions of his reeking maw, for example.
He also described a wench having a lithe, opaque nose.
Which, I mean, you know, to kind of credit,
it's
like,
poetic.
The last time you saw a translucent nose,
I know.
That would freak you out.
It would. It's true.
Well, so after then, so yeah, we talked on the phone today with John Hodgman, who was a former literary agent. We pitched him that book, and he said, "Well, yeah, that book sounds very interesting. I would have represented that book if it was,
yeah,
you know, a 16-year-old with a prodigious thesaurus, like, you know,
yeah,
it was up,
yeah,
his alley." The, yeah, next book he was not interested in. That was Tech War, written by William Shatner and his ghostwriter Ron Goulart.
Yes.
Or as I think Mike deemed them, Shatlart.
Yes.
And this book, the thing about it that no human being would accept is that our lead character was a detective who is, in theory, searching for a plane crash scientist and his insanely hot daughter.
Yeah.
He goes about this by sitting in one meeting after another, listening to them talk about two guys named Bennett Sands and Sonny Hakori. You do not meet Bennett Sands and Sonny Hakori until the final 10 pages of the book.
That's right.
Where they are then killed in approximately 3 paragraphs after they are introduced.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, he's like the ace detective. He's like the guy that, like, nobody, you know, they need him on the force. He's the only one that can crack this. So he goes and sits in a meeting.
Yeah. It's like we once screened a movie that Connor wanted to do for a riff track. So it was called Piranha Piranha. There were zero piranhas in Piranha Piranha. So he's like, huh? That's the selling point. I'm like, yeah, after 2 hours, people go, oh, I get it. There's no piranhas. So that was a thumbs down. He still, he resents it very much.
We should have done Piranha Piranha. There's no piranhas. The next book we did was...
Give a quote from... The Tech War.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so one of the greatest moments of Tech War, because it's this sort of like serious story. There's murders, there's drug addiction, like society's fallen into disrepair. And then there are things that are supposed to be funny, like robot pimps. And the greatest part of the book was when a sentence ended with the phrase, said the robot pimp disdainfully.
Yes.
And so we played a game on the podcast where we found other passages and just tacked that onto the end of them to see how much it would improve them.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, said the robot pimp disdainfully.
And after a long time, the boy came back again. I am sorry, boy, said the tree, but I have nothing left to give you. My apples are gone. My teeth are too weak for apples, said the robot pimp disdainfully.
Good night, stars. Good night, air. Good night, noises everywhere, said the robot pimp disdainfully.
So yeah, it does. It improves every sentence you can imagine. So credit to the man there.
He's on to something there, yes. Then we went to this insane book that was written by, and this one is your phenomenon of this has to be an alien. We were sent this book. It was self-published. Can you give the whole title? I don't think I
cannot.
I
it is the case of the the certified public accountant and the case of the cremated 64 squares records. Or something. Financial statements.
The author, ladies and gentlemen. Love the cover work that you did on that.
So yeah, this is like if an alien, decided that he was going to edit. There's like a simple version of Wikipedia that's meant, I think, for non-English speakers. And so this is as if an alien decided to pick up on human behavior by purely editing that document.
Yeah, I mean, this is a book that you read it and you go, oh, well, the person who wrote this is not right in the head, and so this is not fair. But we looked him up, and he's you know, his Facebook is there. He's just a dude writing books. He is an accountant.
He's achieved 3 financial certifications.
He plays like trombone in the church choir or something.
Yes.
He doesn't like sushi. Wait, this is Paul. So no, he's a real guy and he's a functioning human being. So we thought, all right, we can have at this. But why don't you read a little, give him a little taste of that.
So yeah, so in terms of how, you know, you recognizable human behavior, this passage is devoid of anything. This is him talking about a guy who's going to help in his investigation, a guy named Quick Swift. He thinks, this is not in this passage, but he thinks Quick might be a nickname, short for Quicken or QuickBooks. And so keep that in mind. He thinks Quick might be a nickname, and yet he knows all this about him. Quick Swift went to college after graduating from high school. Checks out. He was an excellent singer, so he majored in music. He spent his years in college singing in plays, singing at singing concerts, singing in a church choir, and he sang every chance that he could. After graduating from college with his singing degree, Quick Swift decided that he wanted to be a professional singer. Quick Swift packed up his belongings and headed in the direction of his favorite singer. That destination was Nashville, Tennessee, the home of the Grand Ole Opry. Who do you think the singer was?
Well, I was like, is his favorite singer the Grand Ole Opry? Quick?
It could have been Mark Cohn, and Quick Swift was just very confused. Yeah. The only problem is that the supply of singers is greater than the demand for singers.
That also checks out.
Yes. While Quick Swift was looking for singing jobs, he had to work as a waiter. Like every other profession, it is hard to get great-paying singing jobs. After 2 years of not getting a singing job with high pay, Quick Swift decided to sell insurance. Quick Swift had a great voice, so he decided that he would use his voice to be able to pay his bills and to be able to eat better. So yeah, a tale as old as time.
Why do you want to work here at Riff Tracks? Well, I want to have money to eat better. All right, you're hired. I like the cut of your jib.
And then, yeah, so that was, you know, the book most devoid of recognizable human behavior until we got to Bob Honey Who Just Do Stuff by Sean Penn.
Ooh, yeah. The less said about this, the better. This is a slog. This is an ugly book.
Yes. Very ugly, very, very hard to read, very hard to enjoy.
Yes. He did not have... I don't want to slander the man, but he does not seem to have a high opinion of women. Every woman in the book was drunk and had lipstick smeared on her teeth.
Yes.
Like, who are you hanging around with? But so yeah, we have no quotes on that.
No,
one.
No quotes from that. The less said about it, the better, as you said. The next book was The Mister. The Mister was a book by E.L. James, the author of 50 Shades of Grey. And it involved characters who had the most mercurial opinions of each other. They were in love with each other, and then 5 seconds later, they were convinced that the other person hated them as much as could be.
Yeah.
Like, they were lying in bed, like, moments after, getting busy. And then they were like, I think he hates me. Yeah. Like from his villa in like, you know, Cornwall Shire that he had like staffed with servants and like begged her to come to. And she's like, he must loathe me. I'm so stupid.
She was an Albanian woman. She had escaped from like a sex slave ring and she made her way to this millionaire's house. But through it, we got a lot of facts about Albania. And so for the first fact, it was like, Albanians do not use seat belts. Like, all right, that's weird. Connor goes online, do Albanians wear seatbelts? And he goes to a site called Facts King.
Facts King was clearly the author's source for the idea that Albanians do not wear seatbelts.
Yeah, did it have like a Starfield background
lettering? It was an under-construction sign and a rotating mailbox, and it was part of the Albania Facts web ring.
So she went there, and that's the only every fact that she put in the book about Albanians. Like, in Albania, the women don't walk down the street.
Yeah.
Really? And then you go to Facts King, it's like, that Facts King says it, so I guess... We have to take it at face value. We have two bits of information about Albania.
At some point in time, you heard that like teachers were sick and tired of their students citing Wikipedia in things. They wanted like a hard source. And so I imagine by now teachers are sick and tired of Facts King getting cited in their like report about the Reformation or Martin Luther King type of thing.
We read that the author, in order to research it, did go to Albania and stayed in her hotel room and looked up Facts King, I think is how it all went down. So that was the mister.
Yeah. And then we just finished reading Trucking Through Time, which was a book written by a grandfather who drove the equipment truck for Tennessee University. And then he decided to write a time about two truckers who travel back in time, save Sitting Bull, and prevent a war with the Sioux tribe and the U.S. government.
And how many times do you...
And we did not make that up.
Unfortunately, he was a little off on his facts.
Yes.
By 50 years or so, I mean, give or take. He was citing James Garfield off by half a century.
President James Garfield sent a telegram the year he was born in this book.
But, you know, it was supposed to be sort of a, I don't know, it was sort of an earnest book about, you know, we mistreated the Native Americans, and there was a lot of talk of, like, who's the real savage here, huh? About 16 times in the book.
Yes.
But then what happens immediately, they capture the Native American tribe that they are staying with and sympathize with, capture a guy, and I'll let you describe the scene.
So again, written by Charles E. Harris, a 65, probably 70-year-old grandfather, a beloved man in the community. They capture this guy. They take him over to an area of the Sioux compound that they call the torture pole.
Which raises the question, what happens over there?
And then they scalp him, and then they slice his wang off and throw it on the fire.
Who's the real savage here?
And, you just have to imagine that was the point, that Charles E. Harris's grandsons decided they did not need the family inheritance, and we're going to be changing their name to, Charles E. Thompson III.
We always imagine him doing the family reading and, like, closing the last page of the book and looking up in the family... I'll put the turkey back in the oven. And
so yeah, that's what we do here.
Yes.
And our next book, as we said, is Kurt Lair of the White Worm.
Mm-hmm.
Very poorly reviewed. But I thought that we should take a look at the tastes of some of the people who have reviewed it poorly.
Okay, yes.
Just to make sure that it's not just like a hit piece that people are pulling on Bram Stoker 150 years after he died.
Right.
So I took the review, the most liked review on Amazon of Lair of the White Worm.
Okay.
And I have isolated reviews that the person also wrote. So she did not like Lair of the White Worm. She gave it one star and said, a hot mess of a book that is only read because its author is famous.
Okay.
So I have maybe seven more things that I'd like you to guess rating for these.
Okay, writings. If she doesn't like Bram Stoker, will she like these things?
Exactly.
Okay.
Angela's Ashes. The memoir, I think, Frank McCourt.
Five stars.
Four stars. Good, but too sad to endure for long.
Okay.
A yerba mate, silicone gourd, and bombilla combo in red lily color. Well, I mean, she hated Lair of the White Worm, so naturally...
Five stars.
Five stars. Great product, fast delivery. Then you have Marvel's Avengers Infinity War, The Hero's Journey, Road to Avengers Infinity War Kindle Edition.
Three stars, too long.
One star, Shameless Réchauffé. Réchauffé. It is a word I had never encountered before.
I don't know.
So that is her opinion of it.
Okay.
It is a shameless réchauffé. It's my new Ogden. Chris Cornell art print, 8x10 inches signed, a painting of the singer of Soundgarden. I assume it's signed by the painter and not him.
Five stars. This guy is better than Bram Stoker any day.
Five stars. Best gift I gave this past Christmas. The woman I bought this for nearly cried when she received it.
I thought you were getting me something good.
Mia Sol women's vintage style embroidered evening party swing dress. Not swingers dress. Just...
Five stars.
Five stars. Beautiful dress needs no ironing. Here we go.
Really getting a picture of this person now.
Well, wait for this one. Alisiva nail fungus stop antifungal nail pen against discoloration, brittle, and cracked nails.
So she's sitting there reviewing all this stuff with her thick, horny toenails, just...
And a reeking maw.
I'm going to say two stars. My toes are still yellow.
Five stars, this works, and I am highly recommended. This stuff works, all caps. I have had toenail fungus for 20 years. Tried all sorts of remedies without any result. This stuff may smell, it may burn, but it kills the toenail fungus. So for anyone out there. And what better way to follow that up than The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn?
Two stars.
One star. Aimless and mean. I really enjoyed Tom Sawyer. Expecting more of the same from Huck Finn. Alas, if the N-word troubles you, you'll want to stay well clear of this. But that's a mere aside. My real complaint with this story is its pointlessness.
Eat my toenails, Mark Twain.
So a rich portrait.
Fascinating. Now, look, we don't want to only make fun of other writers.
Yes.
We want to make fun of ourselves.
Yes.
And Connor, take it away.
We have an audiovisual component of this show, just like the last one did. If we can get the slides up, I'm going to... So, yeah, we make fun of a lot of bad writers. These are not the writers we've made fun of. These are cute high school girls. But we are going to share some stuff that we've written that is in many ways just as bad, even worse. So this is girls who went to my high school. We took a trip to Spain between sophomore and junior year of high school. So we're all 16 years old. At the time, these were girls that I, you know, found attractive, wanted to hang out with. And what better way to do that than to write a love poem to all 10 of them, slip it under their door, and, maybe things will work out. And it was sort of like, it was the sort of thing that's like, this is a joke, you know, unless you're into it. But just to set the stage, though, like, you know, these are all, you know, cute people. Next slide, we can show, like, they came to Spain prepared, like, evening dresses. They are going out to clubs. Next slide. Like, they were, like, you know, put together and nice and pretty. And then the other guys I went on this trip with, like, we're also good friends. We can see the next slide. So that's Brian. He was the class president. Varsity wrestler. He's organizing our 20-year reunion as we speak. Next slide. That's Tino, also a wrestler, good-looking dude, just the life of every party. Next slide. That's Peter. Looks like he got his photo taken by Andy Warhol. And let's see what I was working with. So that's me asleep on the tour bus. The ladies not pictured in the seat next to me. I had them both myself. Let's see another picture. There's me with a stray dog on the streets of Sevilla. I posted this picture on Twitter today being like, I thought I could pull off the guy from Cypress Hill look with the bucket hat. And people are like, you look like Gilligan mixed with Eddie Deezen, who I had not heard of.
Deezen.
Yeah. Anyway, not flattering. Next picture. And so that is the shirt that I wore in Spain as well. So this is important to know when you hear this poem. that was me at age 16 or 17. So we have here, ye old poem d'amour. The images of Spain, the fuentes, fountains, the streets, pale compared to your beauty so sweet. The wind in your hair, the smiles on your face have kept all our eyes locked firmly in place. So clearly they did not read past that part, because that's creepy. We think of you as angels, God's gift from above, so let us embark on this venture of love.
Are you getting to your coursing maw soon here?
So then we individually, that guy Tino and another guy helped me with this, but I think this was all pretty much my doing. Lara, we marvel at your long golden hair. In fact, when Lourdes was talking about the tree and the bear, I think that was some local legend, you distracted us, and so we don't know this fable. So why not come back to our room and dance on our table?
you creep.
That's not getting any better. So for this next one, Debbie was a girl who played on the high school softball team. That's important. And this was 1997, I think. So Austin Powers had just came out. Debbie, perfection, too modest a word. To give you less credit would just be absurd. Your grip on a softball must be awful tight. We'll shag you rottener than those apples last night. Oh.
You sure you want to read on?
This next person was a swimmer. As we watch Lauren's body glide through the water... What? That hasn't gotten to the bad part. We sure have the feeling that nothing is hotter. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Don't swim too deep or else you'll get the bends. Helpful advice. As I saw Kara's face when I awoke in the morn, I realized the true reason I had been born. Oh. Was to pleasure you often.
Whoa.
Steamy and hot. Then you will see all the Mads lovin's I got. Is this what your rapping was like, Dave? This was about a girl who had a boyfriend on the trip, so we were not pleased about that. Claire, hanging on to you this whole trip has been that little monkey, which hasn't given us much time to get funky. But as soon as he's gone, when that gremlin departs, we'll show you all the true love of our hearts. That's not bad.
I mean, it's not good.
Andrea, since we've started this trip, you've taken control of my mind. I can't wait to hit that dance floor and bump and grind. Your body's so nice, so slender and fine. Good Lord, we just made all four lines rhyme. Little meta poetry.
Boo.
No. This next woman was the teacher's daughter who was on the trip, so her mom was there. Jen Dent, right up there with the best. Gee golly, have your parents been blessed? Because of our immense fear of your mother, we will have to write this verse just like your brother. You are very pretty and nice.
That's your best work, I think, yeah.
And this is the last one. I lost the last page of this somewhere in the past 22 years. But tonight in the city, Heather's eyes were sparkly. On Sesame Street, the big dog's name is Barkley. But Barkley, you're not. You're a fine-looking honey. We wouldn't trade you in for any amount of money.
Was that in your wedding vows?
Now, it's funny you should mention that, because let's get a group shot next. So we have there. You can see me, obviously. But let's enhance that. Enhance that picture. So, M. Night Shyamalan twist. Next slide. Yeah. That was Lauren the swimmer. So it worked, Mike. Not your best work.
Then she found that poem, and unfortunately, your marriage ended in shambles.
Yeah. Christian Mingle was the last straw. Yeah. So, yeah, I can write terrible stuff too, folks.
Well done. Well done. I don't think I've ever written anything, you know, terrible or mock-worthy at all. So we're going to have a guest person come up now. Bridget Nelson, are you available to tell your story of bad writing? Grab a mic right there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me up.
Welcome,
here.
Bridget.
Thank you. Is this thing on? Yes?
I think so.
Well, good. Okay, well, I think I'll start. Mike and I just recently went on a European vacation for our 30th wedding anniversary. Thank you so much. But, you know, I did go to Europe in 1982, and that really kind of was a better trip.
Oh.
So,
Understood.
I just thought everyone loves a good travel writer. We all love our, what's that guy's name, Steve?
Einbeck.
Yeah, right, right. So we all love that. So I thought I would give you just a little bit. I went to Europe with 10 people from Cathedral High School and Sister Michaela Fuchs, OSB, Order of St. Benedict. I didn't get my picture in time to do the thing. But anyway, I'll just begin. I'll just randomly begin. We were allowed to go shopping. The shops were nice, but not quite as elite as I had hoped. I imagine those will come in Paris and London. So we'll move right ahead a little bit. let me see. Sorry. It's hard to see up here. So we got to our hotel late because we got lost, but it was worth it because it was very nice. Dinner was gross, but after, we all went to the lounge and had some beers. Also, we started to get to know the kids from the other school. It's really strange because this is a travel journal. It's really strange because they're all like different from us. They like different music and they have different pastimes, but I guess they're okay. It was quite really late and everybody got pretty drunk. I was talking to Alex, our tour director, for a while. And he's an interesting person. But he thinks a little too much of himself, so that makes him a bit aloof. And he is the kind of person that you have to play games with, you know? Because if you talk to him too much, he kind of gets sick of you. And, well, anyway, sometimes he makes you feel like you're saying too many things and that you're dumb. But he makes you feel that way. Anyway, I'd like to get to know him better and tell him how great America is.
Sounds like you were boring the hell out of Alex. Oh, look, Rich, there you go.
Oh, there it is. That's Sister Michaela Fuchs, OSB.
I think that's Frank Conniff in The Habit there, isn't it?
And her French was so bad, she'd always just go, vite, 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 Brigitte, vite, 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 quick, 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 and that, well, anyway. All right, okay, so moving right along, I want to get here, okay. It feels great to get out of Germany. I mean, it was really pretty, but in a way, the people gave me the creeps. Pam and Lisa felt the same as I, and so we talked most of the way to Lucerne. On the way to Lucerne, we started getting into some huge mountains that are called the Swiss Alps. And here's where the travelogue, really, where you're really going to want to visit. They were so beautiful, I couldn't believe it. They just stand there so big and proud-looking. Yet they aren't scary like I thought they would be. I started getting sick, so I took a Dramamine, which was dumb because it made me cranky. Well, we got to Lucerne, and my God, was it gorgeous, beautiful, mountains surrounding with a river running through it and a lake. The hotel was right on the river and close to shopping, and there were bridges covered and walkways all loaded with flowers. It was so extraordinarily beautiful. We went on a tour of the town, and it's small but has a lot of people. All the buildings are from the 13th and 14th century. You want to go? After we got home, we went to McCheaper, a play on McDonald's. It was good. When we got back, all hell broke loose. I was really getting sick and mad at Lisa. And that's all I can read from my travel journal, but I can read more personally if you'd like, so thank you.
Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you.
I like how you had to remind yourself that McCheaps was a play on McDonald's.
On McDonald's.
Future me, if you ever forget this, here's what they're doing. It's a McDonald's thing.
And then 2 years later, I graduated from high school, and we had a big party, and I got all sorts of gifts from all of my mom and dad's friends. And of course, I had to write my thank you notes. And one particular thank you note really caught the heart, and well, actually, she called my mom, Dar, I've got to tell you about Bridget's thank you note. So she read it, and I had wanted, I wanted to be a good writer. I wanted to use words, and so I wrote, Dear Millie, thank you for the pen and pencil set. It was totally uncalled for. I thought it meant, you know, like it was just like, I don't know, Millie, where the hell do you get off giving me a pen and pencil set? Anyway, back to the real writers.
Thank you, Bridge. So, Connor, you picked up your career after the poetry. You mastered that art form. And then what happened?
Well, I was telling you before this that I've shared stuff on stage before, stuff that's, you know, embarrassing things from your past. And once I did it, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. And I was, like, nervous. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel right now.
Forge ahead.
I have a essay I wrote. In high school, you saw me there. 2 years after that, me and my friend Justin got a monthly column in the school paper. They had put out a monthly paper, TJ Today. It was called Connor and Justin Waste Your Time. And that was very accurate. And essentially, by that point in time, there were two things in my life that had formed my comedy, and they were Dave Barry, the columnist, and The Simpsons. And so these columns were essentially poorly done versions of both of those things.
Okay.
And on this one, we make fun of Ernest Cline a lot, but that's because we think we're better than him, and we think our interests are you know, superior to his. So this is about video games.
Okay.
And I'm going to read it, and you can interject whenever you see fit.
Like with a firm stop doing this?
Yes, you can tell me to settle down. It really gets bad towards the end. So, I will not be attending school on November 23rd. I realize that is a moot point since many of you will be absent for one reason. So in high school, just getting back to me, I guess I am glad the internet did not exist and preserve all this stuff. Because I think like the term now is edgelord. For a kid who tries to do something to sort of get a reaction, being like, oh, that was offensive, and not learning that this is not the same thing as comedy.
So you're doing a lot of covering your bases before you read this. So let's hear what this is.
I will not be attending school on November 23rd. I realize this is a moot point since many of you will be absent for one reason or another, be it observing Dom DeLuise's 33rd wedding anniversary or Andy DiMartino, the handsome wrestler's right to choose party. But mine is a much more noble reason. Call it a journey. Call it a quest. Call it a legend. In fact, call it anything other than what it is because it sounds kind of pathetic. I'm going to Adam Zachary's house to sit around in my underwear all day, eat beer nuts, pretend not to check out his mom, and more importantly, play his pre-ordered copy of Zelda 64, The Ocarina of Time. Right? All right. Yeah! I've won him over.
You got him back.
That's all it takes. That's what Klein does. GoldenEye, huh? And as lame and nerdy a reason to skip school as this sounds, I guarantee you that an all-day-long session of Nintendo is the perfect lame and nerdy activity to fill an even block day right before the holidays. The premise of every Zelda game is simple, yet this one promises to be the greatest ever. Link must rescue the Triforce from the evil Ganon in order to preserve order in the mystical land of Hyrule. Along the way, he encounters Octoroks, Tektites, and Dodongos, all of whom he overcomes to triumph in the end. How could something this childish, this simple, become something I have chosen to participate in instead of the suggested activity on December 25th, observing a holiday known as Christmas? My Nintendo obsession, parentheses, fetish sounds so dirty, began in the third grade. My parents decided not to cave in and buy me a Nintendo, which is the worst choice a parent can possibly make. My friends who owned Nintendo used it occasionally, but on the whole, the novelty was gone and the Nintendo gathered dust. Until I came over. I would get worked up into a frenzy.
Keep going.
I would get worked up into a frenzy, usually reserved for uneducated Central Americans who have discovered a picture of the Messiah on their mule's hide.
Take that from me and we'll just end the show right now. Okay, thanks everyone. I mean the podcast and everything. We're done.
So the paper printed this. It's mostly on them.
So this was a dare? You were...
At sleepovers and birthday parties, I was the one who would stay up all night to pack as much video game madness as I could into those precious hours before I had to go home and return to the world I knew, the world of church and social interactions and relieving myself.
Every single sentence paints a darker picture of you as a human being.
Those are the three needs. But even at home, my head would race with thoughts of the next opportunity to play Nintendo. Fast forward 8 years, I am now a high school senior. I am a national merit semifinalist. I have convinced numerous family, friends, relatives, and juries that I am a mature, sane human being. But nothing has changed. That is, in fact, an inaccurate statement. One thing has changed. I now own a Nintendo, a classic 8-bit Nintendo complete with Light Zapper, Power Pad, and Zelda 1 and 2 game cartridges. Plans are in order to purchase a Nintendo 64, but allow me to now digress into witty remarks about Nintendo games. As I hope the mics picked up the grumble of oh my God, is this going on from the crowd? So now it gets sort of stand-up-y. Folks, as far as I see it, there are three kinds of games. There are the Legend of Zeldas of the Nintendo world, the games you could stay up all night obsessing over trivialities such as the location of the blue ring while overlooking details such as the power switch on Grandpa's respirator. There are, of course, the sporting games, Blades of Steel, Tecmo Bowl, and RBI Baseball, for example, the cause of so much conflict and needless death between male friends. And there are the Mario-esque adventure games like Castlevania and Contra, all for which contain, for some reason, creatures named Goombas. Males have an instant bond towards the Nintendo. These are the last two paragraphs.
How long are the paragraphs?
And the editor, this is like the thing we handed to my editor. Her name was Stephanie Batten. She wrote, bracketed this entire paragraph and said, I don't know. Males have an instant bond towards the Nintendo. Guys of all ages can sit down, forget all wrongdoing and animosity, and discover all new wrongdoing and animosity on the TV screen. This universal ability is what makes Nintendo such a great thing to have at a party, and is also why more girls hate that lovable plumber Mario more than Rush Limbaugh, former President Lyndon B. Johnson, and my neighbor Fred Babicki combined. When the Nintendo gets switched on at a party, the girls have to retreat to the corner and engage in conversation. Because girls are never allowed to play. There are two reasons for this.
That's right, right.
One is that if a guy ever happened to lose to a girl at Nintendo, his life would be over. Literally. It would be admitting that the entire women's rights movement has triumphed over mankind.
I don't know.
So, you can read some.
The boys were very hot, and Taylor was in.
So instead of allowing this possibility to exist, it's as easily dismissed as women's desires to vote and have equal careers.
Pickled egg, anyone?
The second reason they are not allowed to play is that, quite simply, girls stink at Nintendo. Why is this? This paragraph, the last one she said, I don't know. This one she just says, all caps, no.
And you wrote stet on it?
Okay, print it. Why is this? Girls never had any sort of opportunity when they were little. While boys were sharing codes and secrets with each other and staying up all night teaming up to beat the game. I think this was mostly Justin at this point in time. Writing this. Girls were talking behind their friends' backs in whiny, shrill voices about things we don't care about.
He's reading on, ladies and gentlemen. He's reading on.
But it's not as if video games were catering to girls in the first place. There was one girl that appeared in a video game who hadn't been captured by the evil boss. Right? I mean, that's on them. And then parenthetical, why did they go along with Bowser? He's a giant turtle, for God's sakes. It's not like he's the ice cream man. And Ganon, he was a pig with wings. If a girl goes off with him, she deserves the torturous fate that awaits her. This one girl was the lead character in the game Metroid, but it wasn't revealed she was a girl until you beat the game in the hardest way possible, a near impossibility. After you win, the hero Samus removes her helmet to reveal long, flowing hair. Then while the credits roll, proceeds to cook a turkey dinner for Mario, Link, Donkey Kong, and Simon Belmont. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
So
the sadness balloon just deflates.
So you were just like a horny little weirdo, huh? People's moms.
I'm canceled.
Connor Lustoka, ladies and gentlemen.
You don't have to. One more thing?
Yeah, we have one last thing.
Well, we realized, you know, while we were hanging out last night, that there are, this is what I got all those prompts for, poor Sean Penn released a book 2 weeks ago. And 2 weeks later, not a single person has reviewed it on Amazon. So I think that we need to be the first ones to do it live on stage tonight.
Let's do it live.
Okay. Let me just find the one-star button. Oh, this is the wrong page. And so we can use these prompts to review Sean Penn's book.
Why don't you just put your review of women on there? That'll be... he'll get the message.
I deserve it. All right, let's.
I'll remind you, by the way, this is being taped. So, like, you can call all these people liars when they say you won't believe what I saw tonight, but it's actually being taped.
Okay, go ahead. What is the what was the letter of the person's father's name?
Jay.
So let's do an alliterative sentence in Sean Penn's trademark style. So
okay. Juicy Jay. This is riveting.
Juicy J just jams jubilantly, which would be better than Sean Penn's second book. What's the next?
Roller Gator. You can talk while you're doing that. Am I supposed to do like a tight five now?
Yeah, yeah. Worse than Roller Gator? That works, right?
Yeah, that's good. But not as bad as those hated birds. God. Tweed, tweed. Shut up! How are you going to work birds in there?
I'm doing literally what you just said.
The next one is Sisyphus. Careful with this. They're our hosts.
Yeah. Sisyphus would have... have preferred to keep rolling his boulder than read this book?
I guess. Do you have any more of your article that I could read in between these little gaps? Let me just pick it up here. There was some stuff at the beginning. Oh my God. Hitler had some good ideas? Connor.
That's on them. They printed it. What's the last prompt?
Blinded by the Light.
Blinded by the Light was a movie that I just watched and did not care for, and it is still better than this book.
Good.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that will be the first review of Sean Penn's Bob Honey Who Just Do Stuff Too.
Bob Honey Who Sings Jimmy Crack Corn. Yes.
And so if he lives up to his reputation of punching paparazzi and abusing people, it comes for me. You can say that I probably deserved it. So.
Yeah. anyway, that's it, I think. Let's.
Thank you for coming out. We really appreciate it. It was fun to see everybody. And
yeah,
really,
thank you so much.
Have a great time doing it. So.
Please read Lara the White Worm and listen to our podcast. And thank you, David Berge. Listen to Like Trees Walking. And we'll be back again next year.
All right. See you
later.
Thank
you all.